On this episode of Skeptico, psychic detective and author of Coffee, Donuts, and God, Vicki Warren.
Operator goes to court, psychic information isn't allowed. I mean, you have to have enough circumstantial evidence to convict. So our job is to help find enough circumstantial evidence. It's the policeman's job to not pollute the crime and take any tips that they can.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, I have an interview coming up with Vicki Warren, who is a psychic detective and a medium, and someone who was very generous with her time and is going to be involved with the psychic detective experiments we plan to do in the coming months. But we had a chance a few weeks ago to talk about Sylvia Brown, about mediumship, and about psychic detective work. Very, very interesting chat. I hope you enjoy it. And it will be a good precursor to the episode I have coming up with Ben Radford on the work we've done on the psychic detective case we've been investigating here at Skeptico, which has been, Ben has put in a tremendous amount of work in that, and as have I. And I think we have a very interesting show coming up. So stick around for that, as well as many, many other things going on here at Skeptico. But for now, here's Vicki Warren. We're joined today by Vicki Warren, who is a psychic, also a psychic detective and a medium as well. She's also the author of a book entitled Coffee, Donuts, and God, which sounds very interesting. So we're going to talk a little bit about the psychic detective work that she's done and a little bit about the psychic detective experiment that we're working on at Open Source Science. So Vicki, welcome to Skeptico.
Thank you so much, Alex. I appreciate your asking me to join you.
Well, I appreciate it. As we were just chatting about a minute ago, we had an interesting talk last week, and I thought you had a lot of interesting insights about your work as a psychic detective. But before we get into that, I thought we'd back up and maybe tell a little bit about your story, your bio, because from looking at your website and reading your bio there, it's kind of in a pretty remarkable way that you came to this work that you do.
Well, actually, I think I was born with this gift. I had the first experience, if you will, when I was about 2 years old, which I remember vividly. And then all through high school, or junior high and high school, my friends, you know, would come to me with questions seeking my sage advice. None of us knew to call it psychic. It seemed then even that I had a heightened awareness of life and life's purposes and why we're here, and always had a bigger picture of what was going on. Grew up in a very small town, so it was very constricting, if you will, and moved to San Francisco when I was 18, where I was just really welcomed by the metaphysical community and felt like I just really fit in. I worked for Sylvia Brown a short time in the 70s as a reader, went out on my own, and have been doing my thing since. I am a professional psychic. I charge for readings. I do not charge for any of the cases that I work on, any of the murder cases.
Right. You know, I can't let that last piece go, and I didn't know that. What do you think of Sylvia Brown? She seems like such a fake to me.
Well, you know,
We just have to be, I mean, part of the whole thing, I think, is if she's not, then she's not. I have no personal knowledge of it, but I think the integrity that we have to have inside of our community of believers, if you will, is to kind of tell it like it is. So I don't know. Is she for real, or do you know? Or
you're asking me to be not ethical in saying that she was difficult to work with.
So you're saying you want to say she was difficult to work with and kind of leave it at that?
That's not very ethical. No, really, I think at one point she was an excellent psychic. I think if you're not careful, if one isn't careful, you begin to read patterns instead of people. And so that's one of the things that I've always tried to do in my, you know, many, many years as a psychic, is be careful that I don't read patterns. And I think when one starts to do that, it can come across as real fake.
So are you saying she has a genuine gift, or are you saying that you don't know?
Well, you know, I haven't seen her since the 1970s, and I worked very closely with her. And at that point, yes, I do think that she had the gift, yes.
I'm just saying, and again, this is a little bit off topic. I wasn't planning.
We'll tell you that she is a pro at marketing, and that makes a big difference in our industry.
Maybe she's a pro at marketing. It's just some of the things she says are just outlandish in the kind of predictions that she makes. You know, as we talked a little bit about last time, I don't know a lot about this topic. I don't know a lot about, I don't know anything about mediumship. I don't have any gifts, at least that I'm aware of. But I've spoken with, at this point, dozens of mediums. And one of the things that strikes me, at least for the most part, is how humble they are. It's almost directly opposite of the Sylvia Browns and some of the other folks that you see on TV. I have one medium who we've worked with who's been incredibly effective at the experiment that we've done. And she openly kind of admits something that I've heard other people say, oh my gosh, every time I sit down to do a reading, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. And I have all these self-doubt and all this. And she just delivers fantastic readings, you know?
Yeah. I think it's really important to maintain your integrity because really, basically, Alex, when we get down to it, all we really have is our integrity. You know, we don't have a degree that allows us to be a psychic. We have our integrity. And we have our honesty, we have our humility. And when we begin to lose those things, you know, it does appear to the general public that perhaps we're not as effective as we once were.
It sounds like you're leading up to say something and then you kind of took a little detour. I mean, she's either, because I think this is one of the things that really confounds skeptics and to a certain extent, it even confounds believers if they're really tuned into it, is that, you know, as nice as that is and as politically correct as that was to say, Vicki, that doesn't mean anything. Either she is purporting to do something that she's not really doing or she isn't, you know?
But you see, I haven't seen her since the 1970s. I'll leave you with this. I did go out on my own after just a few short months of working there. And really, I cannot sit and diss somebody. I just can't do it.
We can't really know. And, you know, just as an aside, and then I'll leave this alone, because like I say, it wasn't even on my radar, but I wasn't going to let...
That was a curveball, I understand.
Well, I can't let that go. I mean, I just can't let that go because she's like such a lightning rod figure, you know? And
I think it's really polarized. You either really, really like her or you really, really don't. And everybody is entitled to their own, you know, opinion. I can speak to my level of integrity, my level of humility. And yes, each time I sit down before a reading, I think, oh God, let me deliver. If I'm talking in front of a group, if I'm on a cruise ship giving a workshop and I'm doing a platform demo, oh please, let me deliver. You know, yes, I do have that fear that some point, you know, information may not come through. I think that's one of the things that keeps me humble, integrity-based, and honest, and a clear energy field, I might add.
Well, let's switch gears for a minute and tell us a little bit about your book. Very intriguing title, Coffee, Donuts, and God.
About 17 years ago, I was given 6 months to live. My theory is that we all come here with a particular life purpose, you know, an archetype, if you will. And if we're not living that archetype and that soul purpose, part of you begins to die away. I manifested that on a purely physical level. So 17 years ago, given a death sentence and not living, not doing readings, I decided I wanted to see what it would be like to be normal. So I worked at Compaq Computer Corporation at the corporate office as a financial analyst, and my soul began to just wither away. I was not honoring what I'm here to do. And at the point that I had that sweet surrender moment and started doing readings again, I gained my health back. And today I'm vibrant, free of any illness, on no medications relating to that illness at all. So it's a story about my journey. So if you imagine sitting with God having coffee and donuts before you come here and you have a discussion about what is your life purpose, it makes it real intriguing food for thought and dinner conversation, by the way, on what one thinks their life purpose might be, and are they honoring it? And that's something that we need to be asking ourselves every day.
Well, that's a good part of your work then. So a lot of your psychic and medium work kind of works at that level with people, right? And that's great. And as you were just mentioning a minute ago, that people can check out your website, and that's VickiWarren.com. You got a great URL there. Don't ever let that expire. That's a great domain name that you have, your name. Well done. So, but,
and that's VICKIWARREN.com.
Right. Okay. So what I really wanted to talk most about, because we've been doing a series of episodes on this, and we spoke a little bit about it last time, was the psychic detective work that you've gotten into. The reason I want to go there is, you know, a lot of things you just said would be very, not even controversial. They'd be more than that. They'd be you making claims about life purpose and its effect on health that a lot of people would find just unable to accept without further evidence. And I'm just going to set those aside and leave those with, hey, that's where you're coming from. That's your personal belief based on your life experience. What we've tried to move to in the Skeptico show is to say, how can we bridge the gap with folks who are skeptical that any of this stuff is true? And one of the areas that we've ventured into is psychic detective work, because we all, for the most part, trust police. We understand what a difficult job they have in, especially, for example, a homicide detective, where clearly there's been this horrible thing that's been done, and detectives are the people in our society that we ask to go and find justice or find perpetrators and get them off the street. So we trust those people. So if you are able to help them, then that would certainly lend a lot of credence to what you're saying you can do in terms of this kind of anomalous cognition of getting information from some source that none of us understand completely. So tell us a little bit about how you became involved working with detectives on homicide cases, and a little bit about what that experience has been like for you.
Well, I think I started my first case when I was in my late 20s in San Jose, California. There was a real high-profile murder of a beautiful young woman. She appeared to me. I was sitting in my kitchen having coffee. She appeared to me, said, tell them Mark did it. At this point, this case hadn't reached the media yet. And so I was able to quickly jot down some notes, get a hold of a friend that worked at the police department. She said, my God, how have you heard of this? And I said, well, she just appeared. And they had just found the body. So it happened that quickly that this young, beautiful young lady came to me, clearly wanted me to know who did it. I did not know the lady or her family or have any connection to them whatsoever. When I was sitting in my kitchen having coffee, I began to feel smothered and choked and a general feeling of not getting enough air and feeling terrorized. And consequently, from the autopsy, she was choked to death and then wrapped up in a rug. And that was a heavy feeling on the chest. So from then on, I began to work with the police. I have to tell you, in those days, it was difficult because not only did the police do a background check on me, but my family and my neighbors.
When they did a background check on you, was it because of the information you had provided on this particular case? Or
it was so accurate that they wanted to know, they were sure that I either knew the person, knew Mark, or knew the girl. And, of course, I didn't know either person. San Jose is a very large city, so I had no connection to them.
What did they say when they found out that you had no possible connection, and yet you had this kind of insight that's impossible to explain?
Well, very highly intrigued, you know. And then after that, they began to ask me about different cases. But in those days, you know, unlike the show medium today, police detectives would absolutely not admit they worked with a psychic at all. In fact, today some will not, and they ask me not to say anything, and I honor that. You know, I really don't. I'm not working their agenda. I just want the family to find closure with these criminal cases.
You know, that's funny. That's something that I've heard over and over again, and I don't know how we're going to be able to establish that for the benefit of skeptics, but we really have to. And that's that I've heard this story of cops saying, look, I'm going to work with you and we're not going to tell anyone. And they have their own relationship with law enforcement will have relationship with certain psychics that they trust and who trust them. And they say, we're going to work together, but I might not even tell other people on the force. I'm just going to use you.
Yeah, you run into that. You know, I did an interview about a year ago on MSNBC, and they had a former prosecutor that wanted to eat my lunch there concerning, you know, working on criminal cases. And I suggested to her that I never have gone to a criminal site. I would never, you know, pollute a crime area. But the other thing she said was she knows a lot of hurly-burly cops that wouldn't have anything to do with psychics. And my reply was, I know a whole lot of hurly-burly cops that do, and some now will even acknowledge working with psychics. So we're beginning to, you know, move that pendulum somewhat.
Do you think so, Vicki? Is that your experience in terms of people being...
Well, it's slow, Alex. It's very slow. You know, it's that pendulum moves very, very slow. It's like a battleship, you know, cannot turn on a dime, and going to take a lot of people like you, and thank you for doing what you do, you know, that can help bridge science and spirituality.
Well, let's hope so, because I'm not so sure that the change is, I mean, I think you're right. I think the change is happening, but it's happening slowly, and it's happening in different ways. As we just talked about, the fact that there's this underground of information sharing among detectives, and there's a certain acceptance if you get in the right crowd, I think makes it better. But I think you also have a number of people who, it's surprising to me, but I talked to and spoken with detectives who really didn't know what they were getting into and kind of innocently stepped into and saying, well, gee, you know, I didn't believe this, but if it's true, don't we all want to know it? And they've just been kind of surprised that they've been just attacked, which they are a lot of times when they come out publicly and acknowledge that they've worked with psychics. The attacks that they take are really quite severe and damaging to the overall effectiveness of them working on these cases.
I agree. But, you know, you have to understand, too, when that perpetrator goes to court, you know, psychic information isn't allowed. I mean, you have to have enough circumstantial evidence to convict. So our job is to help find enough circumstantial evidence. It's the policeman's job to not pollute the crime, take any tips that they can.
Right. You know, Vicki, that's an interesting point that I hadn't really thought of, but... And I don't know if you're saying this, so let me throw it out there and you tell me, but do you think perhaps some of the reason that detectives are reluctant to be public about working with psychics is that it could actually taint or give the appearance of tainting their investigation in terms of what prosecutors could then use? So
that is a real valid point, you know, and I have to honor that. I mean, you know, it's one thing to know the perpetrator and quite another to lawfully, you know, bring them to justice.
Right. So if you were to tell me as a psychic detective that this is the perpetrator and I was to go out and somehow obtain a search warrant, then I would be subject to a defense attorney coming back and saying, you illegally obtained that search warrant, or tell the court why you obtained that search warrant. And then I have to say, well, a psychic told me, and then the whole case kind of falls apart. So it's better for me to not even admit that I spoke with you and just find another justification for getting that search warrant in that hypothetical case.
Let me give you an example of a real high profile in California I worked on. I cannot say the name for legal purposes, for my own safety.
And let me just interject here, because we spoke a little bit about this last week and I didn't understand until afterwards what you meant. But I think what you're referring to is that, one, this is a case where the perpetrator, for all intents and purposes, has been caught and is in jail and is awaiting trial on some of the charges, but has been convicted, is the guy, but is not necessarily someone you want to run around and say, yeah, I put this guy behind bars and I'm hoping that he'll go to jail for the rest of his life. So I think that might clarify for people why you would be reluctant to mention who the actual perpetrator is. I do have to say that Vicki has provided me the name and the phone number of the detective that she worked with on this case, so she's not being coy or throwing out information that she's not willing to back up. So please go ahead and tell us about that, Vicki.
Okay, and I'll just call him Tom. Anyway, the police contacted me about Tom, understanding that they can't do a search warrant or even put a GPS tracking device on a car with the word of a psychic. We had to figure out other means of trying to track him. So I basically described his two sons, described the criminal activity that both sons were involved in, and said, that's the way that you're going to be able to get to Tom, is through his son. And you will find him in, and I named the town in Southern California, described that he had changed his appearance, lost a lot of weight, changed his hair color, his haircut, you know, obviously had falsified documents about his identity. At the point that the first contact the police had with me, I said, I'm looking at least 12 murders. And he said, well, we're only aware of three. After his arrest, and he was found in the city in which I said, and in the way that I said it would happen, and through the sons, at the last count, I think they were had indicted him for four, but were looking at in excess of 20 murders. And so he was involved in drug trafficking, obviously murder, weapons. It's a very high-profile case. And so for the police to bungle that, if you will, over something a psychic said would have been horrendous. A lot of people are still very frightened of this man, a lot of family members of people that he allegedly murdered. So the police had to, my job at that point was to give them enough clues on how to track him and find enough circumstantial evidence to arrest.
Oh, interesting. That's fascinating. It provides a great insight and some background into some of the work that we've been doing and some of the psychic detective cases we've reported on, because sometimes folks can't really make the connection between clues, like you just said, and this information, and then all the other work that has to go into, one, building an investigation so that you can arrest someone and finding them, and then indicting them, and then ultimately convicting them. I mean, the criminal justice system is huge.
And I agree with you, Alex. The pendulum is not moving fast enough, but it is moving in some sort of a right direction. And I think people that do what I do have to recognize and be respectful of the law enforcement process. You know, I have another case that I'm working on in the United States here, and it was a young man who had just come back from Iraq. I think he was 26, 24 or 26, something like that, had gone to a party, was found the next morning on the railroad tracks. He'd been placed on the railroad tracks. The detective contacted me about this case, and it was such a heinous case. At the time he contacted me, I think it was a cold case. It was about a year old. I had given enough information that they did exhume the body and were able to verify some of the things that I had said. At this point, we're fairly certain who the perpetrator was, and so we're in the process now of finding different ways of convicting the perpetrator, if you will. And so it is a very slow, tedious, frustrating process. Thankfully, you know, I'm not an ambulance chaser. I don't go on cases where I'm not invited. So thankfully, the cases that I do work are with the permission of the police and family members.
I think you mentioned to me that you don't charge law enforcement anything for the services that you provide.
No, I do not. That's my way of giving back. I have been blessed in my life with good health now, blessed with the gift of intuition, which I honor and respect deeply. I have a wonderful life. That's just my way of giving back.
Wonderful. Well, I'll tell you what, Vicki, in the last few minutes that we have here, let's switch over and talk a little bit about the psychic detective experiment that we're trying to put together at Open Source Science. Part of the reason for my call to you last week, and you had some very good insights, was we're really at the very preliminary stages of trying to put together something that would match your skills, your abilities, with something that we could demonstrate in terms of an online experiment that worked with cold cases, unsolved cases, primarily homicide cases. I don't know where we want to start in kind of unraveling that ball of yarn there, but I thought we might just talk about some of the thoughts and ideas about how you work and how you might be able to, you know what, I'm going to have a hard time saying that, because I think where you were coming from was really that we are going to have to go through that exploratory process and see how we can match up what you do with what we're trying to demonstrate, because it is unnatural, if you will. It isn't the normal way that you work. Did you have any thoughts that you wanted to kind of bring out about that?
Well, you know, when I do personal readings, I always ask for the birth name and the age of the individual. Now a psychic will automatically say, well, while she's on the phone, you know, and I do readings all over the world, from Vietnam to Israel to Lebanon to Germany to, you know, any country, name it. And I've, you know, done a reading there. But a skeptic would say, well, she's probably on the computer looking this person up. Well, you know, hogwash. I don't. That takes too much time, to be quite honest. And I don't think I could find the information on a computer, you know, as fast as the information that I'm given. Basically, when I ask for a name and age, it's asking that person permission to do a reading for them. So I think when we had our conversation the other day, we were trying to decide how we could do this with just a birth name and an age.
We're going to try different things. We're going to try maybe including a photo. We might try including recordings. And we'll just work with you and some other psychic detectives and try and find out what's the minimal amount of information we can kind of give out and still make that connection. So I think when we spoke last, you had that name and the birth date, and then but you also said that you could do it without the last name, which I think would really handle any kind of skeptical concern.
Yeah, and I don't really want the birth date. I'm not into the dates, but the age does help. So when I'm called in on a criminal case, really all I want to know is the name, the age, and the city they disappeared. And I know exactly what critics will say about that. Well, all she has to do is get online, you know, and read what the media has to say about it. But I will tell you, I don't want any information. I do not get on the computer. Even when I'm talking to the police, I don't want to know anything until I say what I've had to say. And then I'll ask the police, can you confirm yes or no? I don't want details. You know, I don't want to be muddled by someone else's information.
Okay, well, Vicki, we'll be sure to be talking more in the future and may have you back on when we're running the experiment. But I think this will be a great introduction for people to your work and to you and what we're trying to do with the psychic detective experiment. So any other thoughts that we might have? Now, folks, again, your website is probably the best way for folks to find out more about you. And I saw you actually have some seminars that you do on the coffee, donuts, and God topic.
I do. I travel quite a bit, yes.
Great. And also readings as well. They can find information from your website.
For private readings, my phone number is on my website, www.vickiwarren.com.
Well, thanks again, Vicki, and I'll be sure to be in touch.
I look forward to it, Alex. Thank you.
Thanks again to Vicki for joining me today here on Skeptico. If you'd like more information about her website or her book, Coffee, Donuts, and God, please visit the Skeptico website. That's at skeptiko.com. You'll find links to all our previous shows, a link to our forums, and an email link to me. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, bye for now.